Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this.
And add up the parts, you won't have the soul. You can strike up the march, there is no drum. Every heart to love will come, but like a refugee.
Meeting of the minds here on Soma Time. I'm your host, Dr. Mark. Number to call to participate, 646-478-4847. As we take on life itself tonight here on a Wednesday, where, you know, I kind of think we need a big collective timeout. I'm a little just damn tired. You know, I'm tired. You got earthquakes, you got tsunamis, you got all kinds of garbage going on the other side of the world that doesn't seem to affect us much here, but yet there's a couple hundred people under some rubble over there, and I just wanted to take a little kind of beat and just say, you know, put all your problems aside. You're not under a pile of rubble over there, and it just gives me a little cause for pause, so I'm just going to give you a little of this. There you go, to start the show. Just a little emptiness, a little visit the void there as we get started with a little Leonard Cohen here. Anthem, great song. And that one little line in there that I kind of highlighted it was a great song, by the way, Anthem, that was featured in one of my favorite movies, Natural Born Killers, is he talks about perfection towards the end there. Forget your perfect offering. And this is one of the things that's bugging me about the whole healthcare debate. First of all, they're trying to please everyone and they're pleasing no one. And what's happening is that what kind of goes on almost every form of government is that you start thinking about contingencies and you start thinking about what if this and what if that. And you try to cover every damn scenario and you end up with a mishmash. And that's what we got here. And unfortunately, we haven't accepted life as it is, warts and all. Life is noisy. Life is messy. Life is, you know, not smooth for most of us. And when you try to kind of, you know, buff it out like this and make it all shiny, you end up just basically wasting your time, which I think the officials down there in Washington, D.C. might feel like they are doing, because there's just no way to patch all the holes in this fence, and there's no way to provide the health care that the idealistic notion of health care that they're talking about. So we're going to see, because I want to get into the philosophy that's behind a lot of this. And I'm going to start off by telling you right now that everything you heard and everything you've been taught about health is from the perspective of inevitability of disease. Everybody gets sick, everybody breaks down, everybody falls apart. How are we going to pay for it? Right? And where I was schooled, in a little town called Davenport, Iowa, they taught a different doctrine, another river that flew beside the Mississippi, that dealt with life itself. And instead of dealing with this inevitability of disease, they talked about the persistence of intelligence, which hasn't been applied to any of this yet. And that falls under the rubric of vitalism, which is what we're going to spend this time together tonight talking about. We got Dr. Natalie calling us in a couple of minutes from the great state of Tennessee to go over this a little bit with us here. And Natalie Curio, I have to get her to pronounce her name. I'm terrible with these names. And the reason why I'm doing this is because I have anointed next month Oinktober. Because the swine friend has a party. We might as well play the Oompa Band coming in here, right? But I'll give you a little AC/DC. Just here's the official song for Oinktober will be this. That's right. Because
you filthy criminals.
Got to hit that every week, otherwise Blog Talk will take it down. They're back. I mean, the Center for Disease Cheerleading, yes, I said it, is on the warpath again. And today there was actually a nice little protest up there in Albany, capital of New York, rulers of the world, protesting the swine friend, basically for the purposes that healthcare workers are kind of smart, and they kind of understand that this is a poison dart that's being played. That girl is poison, and they've had it, and they're not taking the shot. So they went up to Albany, and they went off. They basically protested outside, and it's actually kind of hopefully something that's going to catch on, because, you know, I'm going to read you some of this rhetoric that has been flying out of the legislatures of some of these states to mandate the shots for people. But here, there's a clip on YouTube. Healthcare workers rally against flu vaccine. See if this will even play.
Healthcare workers rally in Albany against a state mandate requiring them to get the H1N1 vaccine or lose their jobs. Under an emergency regulation issued by the state health department in August, all healthcare workers have until November 30th to be immunized for both the seasonal flu and H1N1. The state will get its first doses of swine flu vaccine next week. Many are reserved for healthcare workers, but some workers say the H1N1 vaccine has not been fully tested and they don't want to be guinea pigs.
I've been in healthcare for 30 years total. I believe as an American, our rights are being assaulted.
It just comes down to the freedom of choice. We no longer have that freedom of choice to keep our jobs.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the H1N1 vaccine is safe and produces a powerful immune response. New York is the first state to mandate vaccines for healthcare workers.
There you go. New York getting the freak on. there's so much. You got to go to this dude's site, this health ranger guy. What's his name anyway? Adams, right? Adams and more Adams. His name is Mike Adams, the consumer health advocate over here at the naturalnews.com. Absolutely cracks me up. Maybe at the end of the show we'll play the swine flu song if I can dig it out of the archives here. But this is nothing new. This is their tactics, and he's got, you know, a list of things about the flu that you haven't heard. Top 10 things there. But I want to get back to vitalism for a minute before we get our guest in here. Let's see if the switchboard is working here. Okay. So if she calls in, I'll notice. So that you get a little idea of what we're talking about here. You've been taught a pathogenic model of health, right, which is the resistance of disease and all this stuff they talk about. Oh, you got to get your booster shot. Where does all that garbage come from? Well, it comes from a perception that the surroundings, the environment, is separate from you, different from you, and dangerous to you. So we must boost you up to resist the evils that are out there. And we talked about last week that on my audio program that I produced with William Whitman called Morning Woo, which now you can go over to somerspace.org, and right there on the homepage, for a low price of $19.97, you can download an hour and a half of education about the autumn that will help you align with your environment. See, there's a code to your environment. It goes with the moon. We talk about it. It's great stuff. Morning Woo. Anyway, as I was saying, the word influenza is to influence, an ill wind. So what is being spread is fear and a lot of misinformation, frankly, about how you're designed to operate and how you adapt to your surroundings and the fact that you are an intelligent being. You're not some dumb pile of rocks. Rocks have intelligence too, but they don't have radio shows. So, you know, vitalism, like I said, is a concept that's been buried and beat up and ridiculed and pushed away, but somehow keeps coming up. Keeps coming up. Basically what it says is that we can't explain everything. As the Twitters come in, Reyes has torn his hamstring, it seems. It's the surgery. Okay, well, maybe Reyes is going under the knife. Great end of that Met game today, by the way. Anyone that watched it, I pity you. But there's a role for this life force in your life. That it's kind of been, like I said, they can't put it in a box. They can't study it. They've always tried to capture it. It's like stop the pigeon. And, you know, all over the landscape, guys like Sheldrake and these guys the last 20 or 30 years have started to look at the environment as a living environment, which is actually the title of a biology course my daughter's taken, which is kind of cool, because it means if I'm alive and the environment's alive, there's a vitalistic aspect to our existence. That means that there's an education going on here. There's a constant conversation going on here we can get into. We'll get into some of the details about vitalism here in a minute with our field expert, Dr. Natalie, who is there. All right, so I will now hit the horn. So joining us from the hills of Knoxville, Tennessee, Dr. Natalie... I'm going to butcher your last name.
It's Carrillo.
Okay, you said
Carrillo?
It. Carrillo. Okay, you sure? Okay. I'm Filippi, so I don't know. They'll figure that one out. So anyway, we were just playing a clip of YouTube about state workers in New York protesting the swine flu vaccine, and it's coming over the mountaintops, you know, even down to Rocky Top pretty soon.
About Rocky Top.
Yeah, I know my own from Rocky Top. I got Eli's brother up here. Yeah, it's Eli's brother was that would be Peyton Manning if you're keeping score at home. There's a lot of a ground to cover here about where we are in terms of understanding how we're designed and how disease sort of works through. Our consciousness, and you know, you as a practitioner, you've been out in the field how long now?
A little over 4 years.
Okay, and did you go to school with life? Where'd you go to school?
I went to Sherman College.
Sherman! Oh boy, now we're getting into some real nitty gritty. Sherman. Last time I was there, the board of trustees had to have like a little huddle to get rid of me.
It was probably the last time I got to see you speak.
that was an interesting little talk I gave. I think it was the time I was jumping up and down on the Stevenson's textbook and wow. Yeah, well, there's like we're talking about the central feature of vitalism as a philosophy as opposed to what's been taught to everybody else in the culture, which I just openly call fatalism. I mean, to me, you have to have opposites here to have a discussion. And if you think about pathology and disease as your healthcare model, you have a Center for Disease Control, you have a National Institute of Health, but you mostly are dealing with the Food and Drug Administration for the most part and how they're going to distribute these things. And it's all about the fact that the environment is ooky spooky, and it's out to get us little old humans, and they have separated. That's the fundamental thing about all these philosophies is that they think there's a separation between the organism and their environment, and in vitalism, it's a living environment. It's a constant exchange. It's an ecosystem, if I can throw that out there,
mm-hmm.
And we're part of it. We're not separate from nature. We've separated ourselves through culture and some of the tools we've devised and, you know, having lights 24 hours a day and some of the other things we've done. And of course, our educated intelligence constantly gets in the way of our innate and universal intelligence. But that one thing, that word intelligence, has been taken out of the healthcare debate completely. And that's why these workers up in Albany kind of pulling the heartstrings, because they were talking about the fact that they want to make choices about their own body. They won't be told what to do. They won't be guinea pigs. And, you know, what intelligence do these vaccines really have? And if you think about it from the standpoint of a broader communication, you know, all the 24-hour drug stores, the whole drug culture really says that you're not enough. You need this chemical to put in your body And they can't even, to my satisfaction anyway, they can't explain how an aspirin works, let alone how a vaccine works. And better living through chemistry is sort of the quote. And how do you get people to understand that they are enough, that they have an ability to adapt, that they have an intelligence that understands how to communicate to the environment when you're coming from a fatalistic, pathogenic model of disease that says you're predisposed to disease, it's inevitable you're going to get disease, we have to make sure we have enough money to take care of all these sick people who are going to inevitably be sick because when you get old, you get sick. And it just seems like the mentality is you're weak, you're beat up, you have no shot. So lean on me. And Big Pharma's going to keep propping you up cradle to grave, starting from, you know, early intervention from prenatal care all the way up to the death panels, right? So
pretty
I mean,
much where they've gone, and I don't understand how they got there, because they obviously did a phenomenal job. They managed this in within two generations, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
I mean, maybe when you were in school this came up. I'm trying to figure out. You probably got into college circa right after 9/11. When you got into chiropractic college?
Got into college, yeah.
Great. So you were there like...
chiropractic college, but yeah, I didn't go straight from undergrad to chiropractic.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Okay. So were you there? Were you there in the aftermath? Because I know I spoke at Sherman like right after 9/11, as the tweets are popping here. Right after 9/11, we had the anthrax scare, and you know, and I went down to. You know, I said, you know, if you guys are really vitalists, this is the time to stand up and start talking about natural ways to wake up your T-cell count. And something as simple and cheap as garlic. That's why when the guy here on the Health Ranger guy says vitamin D is a good resource to help boost up your immunity to the flu, and it's the cheapest thing in the world. It's readily available, and they never mention it. They talk about washing your hands and sneezing into your elbow. That's the advice we get. You know. So I was just going back old school for a minute to back when I was in college, and the big bugaboo back then, of course, was AIDS, and the big drug everybody was getting was AZT, which tore apart your immune system completely.
Right.
And you know, now we're sitting here now. I don't think anybody out there now is even, and if you go the deepest part of the news, like the way in the back of the blogosphere, is anybody talking about the AIDS virus anymore? I mean, they literally change the music every couple of years, whether it's SARS or MRSA or the bird flu, and they always have another bug. There's always another bug coming over the horizon to get us from the icky-bicky school, you know, some continent somewhere else, and we're supposed to just scramble and run for the... You know, I mean, when the anthrax came through, everybody started taking, Cipro and carving up their lungs. And, of course, duct taping their homes and things like that. So I mean, so why don't you give us a park bench view of vitalism as you were taught so ably down at Sherman as a philosophy, and then how do you apply that in your work as a practitioner?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And that was honestly one of the reasons I chose Sherman College, was for the philosophy that they teach there. You know, we just learned that the body has everything that it needs. It was created that way. And you've got your innate intelligence that's running the show and taking care of things. It just needs to be able to do it without anything interfering in that process. And, you know, chiropractic comes into the picture by, you know, sometimes the body does get overwhelmed by certain processes, and at that point, you know, that's where the chiropractor steps in, makes an analysis and determines if anything needs to be adjusted. You adjust it and then step back and let the body go back to normal function. And that's what I do. I've also added in craniosacral therapy as an additional part of my practice, and, you know, just get to see people who come in maybe with a pain or something, and then, you know, a week or two later, they're reporting additional benefits that they never expected that they were going to have, and it's just about greater function in their body.
Well, I mean, this is 101 stuff, but a lot of it comes from the fact that there's a dualism, and Ken Wilber, this great article that I'll definitely, I mean, it's on my blogsummit.net site, the preview of the show, if you ever want to get over there. I always give a lot of, like, background stuff that we usually don't get to talk about, but great article over here, Vitalism Revisited, from some essays that were posted over here on this crazy site, smeddom.net. Oh, boy. The quote from Ken Wilber really gets into it as far as that there's a dilemma. Medical practitioners create this very difficult problem. It's called the Cartesian dualism, the mind-body problem, where they divide things up. See, that's why I like Soma. Soma says there's no division. That's all academic. It's all in your cognition. It's all in your head to make things simple to study. And when you separate stuff like this, too bad we don't have Affolter on here because he always attacks me when I get into this stuff. He always tries to separate. He likes dualism for some reason. Big-time philosophy guy from West Coast and wrote some great books about this stuff, about the healthcare stuff. We had him on a couple months ago. And basically what we're getting into is that you got all this high-flying philosophical stuff going on. This is what Wilbur's saying. And when you boil it down to the physical part of it, right, this is where you were just talking about with the body, which somatic says the bodies are in the morgue, the somas are out running around. There's a relationship, a constant relationship between self and surroundings. And self is different than body because now you're in the subjective, the first person. Everyone lives in the first person awareness. We've been taught a third person philosophy, an outside in philosophy, if you will, that, shut up, Twitter, as I deal with the outside, that absolutely divorces us, literally, from within and causes us to look at ourselves as objects. And when we do that, we lose contact with our intelligence because we're not inside ourselves anymore. And then we become so physically oriented that we become solid to ourselves, almost like Newtonian in a way. And so he says the conventional physician, more or less, treats the patient as a set of symptoms, as a material object, right? That's why it's medications for this, surgery for that, radiation for this, like one physical intervention after another, right? And then
right.
The patient sees themselves as machines that break down over time, right? Parts get replaced. And that's why, you know, the Cartesian problem, it almost causes you to give up your vitality, which is why I really want to take the word health out of the equation. I think it's as useless a word as disease because they're conceptual. Vitality can be measured. Vitality can be enhanced. Vitality can be supported. If you start with life and end with life, you don't have to concern yourself with all this other garbage, because the central feature of any of these philosophical discussions on the chiropractic side of the street, which I try to stay on most of the time, sometimes I cross the middle of the road, go to the Soma side, is, and I get very woo with it, as we talked about before, is that you're dealing with intelligence. And intelligence, the expression of intelligence through matter, the chiropractic meaning of life, which I, out of all the principles, it's the one, the only one I want to pass on to the public before a bus hits me or something like that, and it's all over suddenly, is that that's what we're trying to get accomplished. No matter what wackadoo technique we learn, no matter what school we went to, is that if a chiropractor is worth his salt, he takes this material, this matter, this stuff that you're in, that third-person object that you're forced to kind of see yourself as, my body, my knee, my elbow, my butt, whatever it is, and put you back inside, put the intelligence there, let it express itself through matter, so that when you feel it, and you get that, you know, people forget. You watch a child like soccer starting around here this weekend, and I'm starting to see the kids practice and stuff. And you sit there at a red light, and your life, you got all that, you know, noise in your head. You got to do a thousand different things. You look over the side of the road; these kids are running around playing, and you go, "Wow, they don't have half the distractions I have. They're sitting there in total joy of their environment. They don't feel separated from anything, and their brains are much less complicated and much less organized than ours. Yet they seem to be pretty much adapting to their circumstances." Adult brains are full of spyware, and it causes us to examine things to the point where the gum runs out of flavor, and we're chewing on these old limiting beliefs and old limiting perceptions of ourselves that we anchored into our tissues, issues in the tissues, and then we move in that sort of Tin Man-like pattern, and we're going to get into a little BGI here as we get into some nitty-gritty with you here, as we get a little more application of these vitalistic principles and how the immune system works off of that and feeds off of that, all that fun stuff. You know, but I just wanted to get that out there, that a lot of the stuff that we deal with in on the vitalistic side deals with something as simple as coherence and integrity and things that are very obvious to anyone that has a science background. But because we're dealing with a political and an economic and in some sense sort of an ideological barrier when we talk about the mainstream model and the way that they think that these flu vaccines are somehow magical in a way. We're called the quacks and the alchemists and the wackadoos, yet not one of the officials from the CDC has been able to convince healthcare workers around the world universally to take their vaccine. They realize that their testing procedures, the fast tracking of it. We're going to go over some of the myths here that are out there, some of the things, some of the facts that haven't been communicated to the public. But the fundamental thing about a life force, somehow, that's eluded them. They don't say the organism, the host, has any intelligence or any say in the matter. It's all about the germ. And the germ somehow has the force, like in Star Wars-y about it. So now you've gone through a couple of cycles of flu and allergy season and, you know, all the garbage that they go through. Patients come in with a lot of, you know, self-limiting, like I said, perceptions about themselves. How do you, in your work, because the old school chiropractic education was to get them to start looking at spines and IVFs and nerves and things like that, and everything was about mechanics, which I thought was a very strange way to go into a vitalistic conversation, was to break you down to your skeleton and take your head off.
Right.
You have no skull. You're just this bag of bones. And how do you go about orienting a client to the way you're going to be delivering care as opposed to the way they maybe used to be getting care?
I really talk about possibilities with people because there has, I mean, on every level, from the person walking into your office to the people in your neighborhood and the government officials making decisions and the medical workers working in the hospitals and the, you know, doctor's offices and things, there's really a disconnect there about the power of the body, the power of the innate intelligence. I know you don't want to talk about body, you talk about soma, but in my terminology, you know, that's kind of the same thing, and just about how much potential there is there. In the biogeometric integration, or BGI, Dr. Sue Brown, who developed that, talks really a lot about potential. You know, when she talks about the big chiropractic term subluxation, you know, the misalignment and the occlusion and pressure and interference and all of that, she just simply talks about it as it's potential. And from her engineering background, she's like, it's potential energy. And it can sit there and fester in a way and create problems, or it can be released for healing.
Well, this is, again, this is that aspect of memory that we were talking about before, where you download experience into your physical body. That's the immaterial nature of your being, and the material nature of your being having a conversation, which is a totally vitalistic thing, which is what makes us appear to be very kind of freaky woo. But it's the same conversation, actually, that says the flu is out there in the air and we get in contact with it, and somehow the germ gets passed into and it shows up in our body as an immune response and symptoms. For some reason, it's okay for the flu to be out there, but nothing intelligent, nothing that's going to cause us to adapt to our environment, and nothing that's going to cause us to actually grow and develop, which is a strange division they've made. So, you know, that's why even in this article, instead of thinking about yourself as the end product of this molecular structure you're talking about, this body, like I said, the third-person thing, you think of the molecular structure of your body as the end product of the life force that gives you the quality of that you call being, okay? So it's like, you get up in the morning, you're outside your body, you're kind of like the cab driver's off, right, off duty, right? So when you're asleep, you're not aware of your body, your physical body in space. You have like zero proprioception, right? Long clock goes off, bing, you get up, gravity, all these things. What animates you at that point? Now, some would say it's a bunch of chemicals. Oh, it's cortisol, it's this, it's that, it's brain synapses, things, all the stuff, right? But in a vitalistic perspective, we're saying there's a field, that intelligent field, that actually has been proven now through some of the research on heart rate variability. It's about 25 feet around your body, and it's monitoring your surroundings. Now, when something goes on in that, and an event goes on, it tells your system to say, hey, something changed, figure it out. And every 4 seconds, we talk about the four-second window a lot on the show, your system says a very simple question, which comes from the movie Marathon Man: is it safe? Remember that with Laurence Olivier drilling on the guy? Dustin Hoffman, is it safe?
Hmm.
And the minute you feel perturbed, your body has, as a living system, you call perturbations, your body goes, whoa, what the heck? And it starts to reorient itself. And the more accurate it is at doing that, the more coherent it is, the more of a clear conversation it's having with its surroundings. That whole thing takes place in an immaterial venue. It doesn't have it. You can't put a fork in it. It's a vibe. It's a vibration. It's a frequency, as Sue would say. Right? Now, what happens is we have a design in our system, all right? Now, some of it comes from, you know, the Akashic Records, okay? It comes from our long tail, right? And the rest of it is epigenetic, comes from how we adapt it. So we get a map, and then we have this territory, and we have to constantly have this updated kind of dynamic conversation going on between the map and the territory, if you want to get all NLP here for a minute, to make our systems sort of fresh and updated. And we walk around with a lot of expired maps. You know what it's like when you get one of those bad map quests and you're driving along and the exit chains, everything's, you know, you're a world of hurt, right? Well, think about how that conversation happens down on a cellular level when you're in all these distorted postures and your system is not able to update itself, and all of these very scary, very I'm-not-safe experiences are still running around having these little side conversations in your system. Well, it creates like background noise that we call tension. And when you have too much tension, you start to split your awareness. And we talk about this a little bit in terms of the way that in Barreau's work some of the stuff I researched about 10, 12 years ago, Trigan Barreau, first American psychoanalyst, he talked about this in terms of phylobiology, okay, our relationship with our own species, right, is that our attention has two speeds. One is detention, the split attention, the more the Cartesian model we talked about before, right, which causes us to see things through feelings and symbols and a lot of abstractions, uprooted stuff that we can't really put a fork in, abstractions. And then there's cotension, this coupled attention that links us as an organism to our surroundings, and we feel that the state of flow is what I'm getting at here. And so what happens is that when you have not a really good signal-to-noise ratio between those two levels of attention, your system will go through a buckling pattern, which gets into our geometric stuff we talked about here. So to experience yourself internally as a three-dimensional dynamic form, right, that has a conversation going on with a field around it, like a little globe around it, gets you into a spiritual conversation a little bit, right? You start getting into mystical stuff. That has, you know, roots in humanity going all the way back to, you know, wherever. But for some reason, that's not science anymore. We can't talk about that. Oh, no, no. But when someone walks in your office and they're suffering from low back pain and you question them and they've had no injuries, no this, no that, this, and you put them on the table and you start just doing your thing and they start releasing a whole bunch of this tension in their body and their system starts to open up and they get all these, the blood flushes through, you see the breathing change. What is that dance about if that's not a vitalistic dance? There's not, and I've had MDs, and I've had these hard-ass, you know, orthopedic guys watch us work, and they stare, and they don't know what the heck's happening. I go, you know what? My nervous system's in the room, too. It isn't just them. So there's a coherent transfer going on. All of these things are conversational. All these things are up for grabs. But for some reason, we're living in flatland. That's why when this flu vaccine came up, it was actually worse to me than when they just named the thing the swine flu, and they had the Mexico people walking around with masks on, kind of goofy. So, you know, you're sitting there in Knoxville, and I guess most people, you know, around the country, and I've interviewed people from all over about this topic, when they're at that point of choice, when you're sitting at the kitchen table, and you're saying, you know, if they knock on the door and they say, listen, you know, flu shot or, you know, we're going to have to quarantine you, how are you going to make that decision? What are you going to factor in? If you're knee to knee with a client who's worried about this, who maybe has had experiences, you know, and gotten ill and they're afraid right now, will you give them knee to knee advice about the fear or knee to knee advice about the flu itself? Would you take on the entity or would you take on the organism? Sitting there looking for help.
I would probably touch on both of them just because, you know, like I said, for about two generations now, they've really drilled it into people that help comes from outside somewhere, and it just takes so much. I mean, if you don't know anything about Knoxville, we have five medical centers here. Well, two of them just merged last year, but so now we have four. But, you know, they're huge medical systems. For the size of this community, that's a lot. And a lot of my clientele actually work within those systems. And so just yesterday I was having a conversation with one of them who, you know, another client in the room at the same time, they were getting adjusted at the same time, was talking about the swine flu. And this one nurse was like, oh, well, people are dying from it. And I looked at her and I said, really, like, where you work, people are dying. And she was getting into that really, like, you know, anxious, we got to talk mm-hmm. about this, like, this is an epidemic happening kind of thing. And I said, well, and they've actually been confirmed cases. And she said, well, yeah, they are confirmed cases. And then she realized I wasn't buying into that fear that she, where she was going. And she stepped back mm-hmm. and said, but these are all people who had underlying health conditions. Like, they were already in the hospital.
Yeah, that usually doesn't make the headlines when they do that. They, most of the time when they do this, they say somebody dropped dead in Oregon, you know, of the swine flu, as if it, like, you know, just was traveling in the air and found this poor guy raking his leaves or something, and he just went down
yeah.
like a ton of bricks.
And
when the guy had, like, you know, horrible, you know, kidneys or something like that, it's like, oh, then he succumbed to this. The,
exactly.
the old expression from Freddie Barge was, you know, the rats in the dump. You ever hear that that whole story?
No, I never heard that one of his.
Well, basically, if your body is in poor condition, it's broken down, like we talked about before, when it's holding on to all this old up, you know, unadapted maps, and it's there's a lot of interference in the system from just, you know, life. Like I said before, life's messy. It beats you up. You know, if you don't recharge your system, there has to be a driver at the wheel here. That's what educators are supposed to do. It's supposed to sit there and monitor itself and have this internal conversation. When it fails to do that, it develops poor habits and it starts to go into disuse, and the system is in more repair than it is in growth, right? So the system has to kind of update itself. And what Freddie Barge was talking about a million years ago was that when you do it with disease in the way that the medical doctors talk about, you have, if you go down any city dump, you find a lot of rats, right? So the environment attracts the scavengers. The scavengers in this case would be your swine flu. So they used to, 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago now, I was probably back in undergrad, they used to talk about almost every one of these conditions as an opportunistic infection. They used to say, better watch out, you could, you know, they wouldn't say you catch strep. They would say you get a secondary infection, you get an opportunistic infection. Something will proliferate because the pH in your system is going to create an environment where those critters can grow, like yeast, things like
right.
that. And they would give you things that were more antiseptic than antibiotic. They used to be much more conservative, okay? Then they went hog wild because people started gobbling these things up. You didn't have 24-hour drugstores 25 years ago. It was unheard of. They weren't off-labeling things. They weren't putting things basically that were prescription drugs into over-the-counter form. It's the culture. The culture demanded it because they wanted faster temporary relief. Temporary relief was never really advertised. It was fast. So when you operate with a culture that was so just enamored with being symptom-free, I've talked about before, that idea of being perfect and having absolutely, you know, this idea of having no symptoms ever, no pain ever. This is what the culture wanted. The culture demanded it. Now you're dealing with ramifications of this, you know, for the last generation and a half, and this is why we have so much of a bubble mentality that almost anything that happens out there scares the bejesus out of people. And they'll do anything to get away from it because they've been told that, you know, for the most part, they have no control. They have no influence. They have nothing to say about this. And let's see if I could find, this is...
Now, I love Lipton's work for that reason because...
Oh, yeah,
I want
to get to Lipton. Yeah.
You know, you can change your DNA. You simply have to change the environment that it's in.
Well, that's a bigger fish, actually.
He talks about chiropractic being a huge part of that, changing the environment, making the environment of your body healthier, so that
when you get to the point where people understand that they're not their genes and that the genes are not the predisposers to the disease, that there's actually an epigenetic, that the membranes on your cells have more to say about what genes get expressed. Bruce Lipton, we're trying to get him on the show. The guy, obviously, he was on Blog Talk Radio this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Maybe I'll put that in the links afterwards. He's got a new book out, Spontaneous Evolution, great stuff, that merges our biological and our cultural evolution together, great stuff. And Bruce and I shared a wild car ride a long time ago. We basically were sharing all of our thoughts coming down a mountainside in California. We almost drove up the road laughing our heads off. But basically what he talks about, I talk about my work too, is that if you think of your identity as a signal out in the environment and your cells and every protein in your body as an analog of that signal, as basically a physical manifestation, like you saw before, the intelligence is out there in the field, and then all of a sudden it comes into form. This is the result. What we're taught basically is that if we break down the radio, the music's inside, and it's not being broadcast from somewhere else. We're holographically incarnated here. This is a hard thing to get mainstream people to understand, because they're taught from the beginning to think about parts, 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 parts. How can you think about a holistic paradigm when you're taught to name everything, you know, from your fingernails all the way up to your hair, from you know, cradle to grave? And every disease has to have a label too, and then all the predispositions. It's exhausting. I mean, if you think about what that Merck manual's been growing like in the last 10 years, it's amazing. I mean, shyness is a disease. You know, the social phobia, and they drug them for that.
Well, that's because they came up with a drug that they thought would fix it.
There you go. So here's a couple of fix that the people maybe haven't heard about, the swine flu vaccine, okay? The vaccine production was rushed, and Big Pharma is lining you up. Let's see. Swine flu vaccines contain dangerous adjuvants that cause inflammatory responses in the body. This is why they're suspected of causing autism. Ooh, that's a nasty one. Swine flu vaccine can actually increase your risk of death from swine flu by altering or suppressing your immune system's response. This is all from my friend Mr. Adams here. Doctors still don't know why the 1976 swine flu vaccine paralyzed so many people. Paralyzed people, okay? And that means they really have no clue what the upcoming vaccine might do. No swine flu vaccine works as well as vitamin D. We talked about that before. Even if the swine flu actually works, mathematically speaking, if everyone else around, this is funny, if everyone else around you gets the vaccine, you don't need one. This is the other thing about vaccine as a policy. We're going to talk about this next week a little bit with Barbara Lowe Fisher. Maybe in September, I don't know if they give you the no shots, no school wrap around the school systems down there. They really press that for you guys in Knoxville, because it's really hard around here in New York.
Children, so I don't know how pushy they are about that down here. I'm pretty sure they get an exemption in the state, but I don't know how hard that is.
Yeah, New York State, they still have religious exemptions here, but they really put you through your paces, and Mayor Bloomberg has been just adamant about it down there in the city. And for the most part, the model, if you really question them, and I've questioned a lot of school nurses, I mean, I don't know, over the years, my kids, forget about it. And you ask them point blank. Let me just follow your logic. I just got here from Mars. Okay, I want you to explain this to me. My kid's not vaccinated. Okay, your kid is. Your kid's supposed to be bulletproof to anything, including my kid, who might have the chicken pox or something that he might spread to your kid and give the kid natural immunity, which we can't even talk about. So it's like the model is the unvaccinated kid, who's supposed to be the vulnerable kid that you would want to sequester and separate him from the population, because he's the kid that's not protected. All the other kids should be basically, from my angle, bulletproof. But for some reason they go, no, your kid is the problem. Your kid is the one that threatens the vaccinated kids. I say, you can't have it both ways. You can't stick everything into these kids' veins, call them superhuman, and then my kid walks in and goes, hello, and they go, run away! It's like, it's almost as if they've created a model, the germ theory model, where everything that's not in line with them is a threat. And so when you explain that logic to them, so I'll sign whatever waiver you want that lets my kid go to school with your vaccinated kids, because your vaccinated kids are going to be screwed up. They're going to be behavioral problems. They're going to have cognitive development delays. They're going to have visual delays, because all their resources are chasing a bunch of artificially induced defense responses. And so what happens with that is actually, in terms of homeopathic stuff, now we're going woo, guys. It's 9:43. We're going woo. We're going rogue. You start getting into miasmic issues that are below the level of cellular structure. Now we're going all quantum on us here. We don't know what's going to come out of the pie at that point, because things become emergent. And then when you deal with the fact that most of these kids get multiple drug therapies, they get different antibiotics and all kinds of stuff that are not proven, because most of the ways that allopathic medicine works is they combine drugs that haven't been tested in combination, they've been tested by themselves. So you have no idea what response. It's a total Russian roulette thing. And they chase and chase and chase the symptoms. And for the most part, people like to be put into categories. And that's why when it comes to things like this, like the swine flu epidemic, or pandemic, What people really want to hear is, well, what do I do? If not for the vaccine, well, how do I defend myself? How do I protect myself against the evils out there? And that's why I said the whole theme of influenza, of influence, is what's influencing you. And I just said, you got to laugh. You got to have fun with it, because it really is one of these things that, to me, they can never scare me with one of these bugs. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's sitting in that chair right across the desk from me right now, because I have an intelligence that says, if I can recognize what that is, just like I get mail, you know, delivered to me, I go, okay, I know, kind of know who this is from the envelope. I know who it is. Whatever's inside is not gonna be something that's gonna cause me to go into this life threatening panic, because of the vitalistic principle. And one of the things that I liked about, you know, some of the interactions we've had is that, rather than try to explain it with belief and explain it with your head, you do it through action. So you talked about cranial sacral therapy, and you talked about a little bit of Sue Brown's work with BGI, geometric integration.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that when you get up in the morning, you go in and take care of a client who might be riddled with anxiety, maybe not even about the flu, they can be afraid about anything, that allows you to go into a state inside that doesn't allow, because a lot of times it's panic, both doctor and patient will go in there, and it's like everything is about opposing the symptoms, everything is about getting them out of pain, everything's about getting them to the point of relief. And I have never been able to go into a room with a patient that's in an incoherent state and not felt grounded about it, felt this is the place to be. It's up to me to run me, not let them run me. Speak to a little bit from a, you know, field practitioner's point of view, dealing with people that are suffering with all kinds of overload, and it's your responsibility to be in a different place, a different state, on a consistent basis, and how that's helped you, how you think you can help people through what's going to be Oinktober starting tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, I had a really great mentor. My philosophy instructor at Sherman was Val Panaccio. I don't know if you've ever met her, but
yes. Is she still in the country? She was in Florida for a while, and she went to Florida,
and she's been in New Zealand for the past couple of years. She's I don't know her exact title, but she's second in command at the school in New Zealand.
The Panache, yes, big eco like me. We go way back, me and her.
But yeah, you know, she was great because I used to get adjusted by her, and, you know, you might have something physical going on expressing itself in your body, and she was always really grounded in the whole, well, you know, there's a bunch of possibilities here. This could be physical in its source. It could be emotional. It could be mental, or it could be spiritual, you know, and she really just sort of left it in your court to figure that one out. And so that's really where I take my clients is, you know what, this you have this physical expression going on, whether it's pain or some other kind of symptom, you're sneezing or whatever, you know, what do you think's going on? Tell me what's going on in your life, you know, what could this be, what could the source be on this? And I let them try to kind of think it through so that it's not me just continually giving them all the answers. They need to learn critical thinking about their own health.
Well, and again, what's their reference point for health is the absence of symptoms. And we're saying the symptoms are actually communicating to you from, that is your intelligence telling you things. And if you panic and suppress it, you miss the message.
That's another thing that I say. You know, I'm like, if you have a pain and you just pop a pill to get rid of that pain, basically your body called you on the phone to tell you something and you hung up on it. So you need to get back on the phone and you need to figure out what your body is trying to tell you. So, you know, I just really encourage people. My big thing, everything that I'm doing is really about removing interference from a person's situation that they're in, helping them to see where the interference is. And if it's something that I can help them to remove or something that they need to work on their own, it's just bringing an awareness to that, because I'm just all about helping people to express who they really are without that interference in the way.
Mm-hmm. Now let's take a
look. Whether that's a person with cancer expressing their
right.
full self, or whether that's a person who doesn't have any named diseases, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
it's all the same thing to me.
Well, also in October, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, you know, that's another disease that over the last maybe 5 or 10 years has gotten a lot of funding, a lot of consciousness raised, not so much because of conventional radiation treatment, but also because of looking at cancer from the emotional side and what happens to these women and how, where does that come from? And the psychosomatic aspects of these big killers out there, these big diseases, and what is it really saying about us and as a culture that we continue to fight the like you said before, it's like if you hang up on it when it's cold and a snivel, and it comes back and it says, okay, how about, would you like a little rheumatoid arthritis maybe? Would you listen to me now? Oh, no, no. Would you like a little systemic immune? Okay, now how about cancer? How about a heart attack? At what point will you let your system speak to you? Again, the expression of intelligence through matter. I didn't say it was going to say something nice if you've been ignoring it, but it's going to talk to you. Everyone goes, oh, I'm having this wonderful conversation with my intelligence. And it's going, you stupid idiot, listen to me. And it's like, you know, it will get your attention. It'll cause a flat tire in your life to get, and again, this is only the symptomatic side of it. Forget about the drama and the karma everybody's out there running around in. You could look at relationship dynamics, social synapses, as well as neurological ones as indicators. This is what homeopathy does. It's the whole portrait of your life and looks at how you're interpreting these experiences, not so much that you're having them. The train can hit you or me. It's how you adapt and how you interpret that experience that tells you what the meaning of that experience is. That's why the swine flu is a big symbolic sort of, IQ test. You know, to see an EQ test for emotional intelligence, to see if you're interested in getting a little deeper into your being. If you go way up on the surface and you're sitting there with your hands on top of the buildings, panic, waiting for the helicopters to rescue you, the vulnerability, the helplessness, the victimhood, all that stuff that goes with it is part of the package. They will be the sheep lining up to get their flu shots because they're full of the flu, and they scare the old people every year with this. And, you know, what did they say? They expected 90,000 people to die of this sucker, and what happens? If they kill 45,000 with the flu vaccine, they did a good job, according to themselves. They set the standard they could do. They literally can throw a football stadium of people off the planet between now and New Year's Day, and in their terms, that's a winner. We beat it. It's amazing. When only about 11,000, 12,000 people die of the regular flu per year, we're going to go 7 or 8 times higher to that as our benchmark, and work our way back to 11 or 12,000, and we still only—I don't think we have 1,000 deaths in the country yet. And this thing's been out there for 6 months. So here's a little view from the other side of the street.
Interesting thing: the numbers are lower, and that's what they can't really explain to anybody. So they kind of shut that to the back of all the articles.
I think what's happened is they've actually scared enough of us so much that we're almost the point where blasé. I mean, how much more can people be put on edge between the economy, between the healthcare debate, between things like this, and dealing with all of this in a drug culture where you're supposed to panic about everything that happens? I think at a certain point, you're at saturation. You just go to the movies. You know, you just put on the wrestling. You just put on Dancing with the Stars, and you go,
Right along with that, I was at I had to take my mother-in-law to the airport on Monday morning, and it was really striking to me. I hadn't been to the airport in probably a year, and I walked up to the doors and noticed that there's actually like a sticker which looks like it's been on the door for quite a while now that says like the threat level is orange, And I was wow, if that's not like a constant stress on like everyone who has to ever walk through that door. I mean, think about the employees who work at the airport who have to see that all the time.
Well, every day.
Consciously absorb it, like, every day that's hitting them.
Again, fear is what spreads faster than flu. Yeah, exactly. We got a call here to see if they're a listener or they got something to say. You're on the air, 111, whatever you are. You got a question for us here in summertime, or are you just listening? Silence from the 111s. Are you there? I love this. All right, you're off. Well, they call and they listen. I don't know. Sometimes they're on the West Coast and they're driving around. But I wanted to play this for you because this is a People's Republic of New Jersey story this is what we're dealing with. This is some of the implications of what's coming up in Oinktober here. Just take a listen here.
Now recommend all children 6 months and older get the flu vaccine, but one state has created an uproar by requiring parents to give their young children the flu vaccine, or they will be kept out of school. Sharon Alfonsi reports from New Jersey.
The ritual that brings tears to so many children's eyes now has some parents screaming right along with them, with the state of New Jersey now mandating every child who attends daycare or preschool to get the flu shot, or they'll be kicked out of class.
I have a really big problem with the mandatory flu shot. I think that in this great country, we need to have choice.
Louise Kuo-Habakus is a New Jersey mom with two boys, one of hundreds of parents now protesting the New Jersey policy.
No American should be legally forced to play vaccine roulette with their child.
Worried vaccines could cause everything from asthma to autism, they rallied outside the New Jersey State House this week, voicing support for a bill that would allow them to opt out of some vaccines. But the state has full confidence in the vaccines and is not budging.
If we allow parents to pick and choose their vaccines or the particular vaccine choices for their children, that it could potentially put not only their own kids at risk, but also the community at risk.
Health officials say children spread germs so easily, the state has to step in.
But no other state mandates flu shots for children. There are similar battles playing out. In Maryland, school officials threatened to put parents in jail if they didn't get the required vaccinations for their children, arguing those parents were putting other people's kids at risk.
I don't understand why I would need to vaccinate my children in order to keep you safe. If you think about it, that kind of logic just doesn't make any sense. If you're vaccinated, you're safe.
A debate as personal to parents as the shots are to their kids. Sharon Alfonsi, ABC News, New York.
There you go. Outside, it's America.
That really is pretty scary that they're just taking control away from parents. They were those health decisions, and they haven't tested this thing enough.
No, and again, they're not
even if you want a vaccine, like I would, I don't know. It's just shocking to me.
Yeah, this is scary. This is I'm doing these Oinktober shows. We got the guy from Giant Microbes coming on the 28th. I just got him half confirmed. He's a guy that makes these little dolls of all these buggers. I got my swine flu vaccine doll. I mean, my little swine flu actually flu bug. As a little doll, I'm going to show the kids next week in the class. Because again, we have to sort of desensitize. Because if they're playing Papa Bear here and saying you don't know enough to make a choice, but we're going to tell you, they're taking the bat out of your hand in a sense, and they're saying if you're basically a hazard. And like I was talking about last week, they've shifted from individual choice because they know they can't win that battle to making it an issue of public health, and so now. Anything that involves, this type of pandemic type of things, they're going to wave the public health flag, and you become a public health hazard. And if you resist, and if you don't have your papers, you're now basically in violation of a public health code, no different than a restaurant would be if they didn't clean their kitchen or something like that. And you're contaminated. You're dangerous. You have to be quarantined, separate. And Maryland's moving fast, and Massachusetts is moving fast. To actually get like child protective services, take your kid away, to make examples of the holistic nuts out there that are ballsy enough to say no friggin' way you sticking that poison in my kid. I told one kid, I said you got more of a chance of surviving the flu season if you take a vial, go down, stick in a puddle outside your house, stick that in your body. it's like what they're putting in this vaccine is such a cocktail that. All you have to know is the healthcare workers in Asia, Europe, and here in New York anyway, and in Connecticut, I was just talking to someone before the show, and that clip about the Jersey vaccines comes to us from my client, Maury Madden, sent that over to me. The people in Connecticut, they're also protesting the healthcare workers. So if the people that have the most awareness of this thing on the allopathic side, these are hospital workers, and they're refusing to take this thing. You know, soccer moms in New Jersey know enough not to do this to their kids. So that's what I'm saying. We're at that point now where all bets are off. And like I said, don't make it all kind of light and airy and all up with people. This is like a written test. This is basically like a road test to see, are you a vitalist or are you a fatalist? And if you're a vitalist, you will say no to this thing 1,000 times and twice on Sunday. And if you're a fatalist and you think every disease is out to get you, line up and be one of their guinea pigs. Because, they don't seem to have any responsibility if this thing fails, if this thing causes more problems than it solves. Like I said, it can kill 50,000 people, and they'll say, we expected 90. And they will, and that's five times of what the regular flu would take out on a given day, any season that we've experienced. So this is a different October, guys. This is a different
atmosphere we're in, and they'll escalate it. If they don't get what they want from the states, if they don't get enough of these laws like Maryland and New Jersey and Massachusetts are passing, they'll amp it up to Patriot Act conditions. That's how serious they are about forcing this one down your throat. And you have to know, you know, how to get the information. Like I said, Barbara Fisher's coming on the show next week from the National Vaccine Information Center, and going to talk about not just this one, but, you know, some of the ones, like, I don't know if they're pushing the one in your state yet for the 13-year-old girls, what's the heck of the name of that one? What's it called?
The HPV.
Yeah, right, HPV virus, yeah. And again, where will they stop? When will they stop? And this is we're now moving into an era where they've exhausted the antibiotic layer of things. And they've seen the ramifications of that, and now they're moving into, you know, working directly with genetic material, working directly with what they perceive to be the next stop on the train. It used to be get the bugs out of your blood. Now they're trying to get your immune system to basically dance to their songs. And they still think they can go on the material plane. And again, when you get one-on-one with an allopath and you ask them these questions, they usually don't have much of a philosophy behind it. They just think disease is bad. And disease is rampant. And disease is everywhere. And literally, it's what I hear. Pediatricians stuff, disease is everywhere. And they're surrounded
by
kids
in the environment in which they work. That's why.
And I'm like, maybe that's it. You're in a hospital. You're in a pediatric clinic. Yeah, the disease is everywhere. I guess where you're looking. And it's like I always think of the saint in the pickpocket. You know, when they look at someone walking down the street, the pickpocket sees pockets, and the saint sees, you know, a sentient being walking down the street. So perception and reality get a little bit overlapped here, but fundamentally, like I said, we're trying to talk about this vitalistic principle in its nuts and bolts. And I guess to kind of go full circle with it here, to get back a little bit to your work with biogeometric integration, is that if you think of the body as something that's organized to function in this environment, that, you know, I've had, you know, the Peter Gaskius people on here talking about. There's a design to the body, and I'm not going to go intelligent design on you guys on a Wednesday night. I'll leave that for another day. But that there's a design motion, the way your body's supposed to move. And all the OTs that I talk to and all the PTs I talk to, they understand kinetic chains. They understand that there's a locomotor system. Talk about the relationship between movement and immunity as you've been experiencing it looking at clients, because I have a lot to say about that. I'll let you chime in first.
Yeah, well, this doesn't even just come from the biogeometric integration, but actually this goes way back to the cliff-dwelling Native Americans. They had a phrase that said, movement is life. And so when you stop moving, you stop living.
There's an old guy in Iowa that said that, too.
There's a really beautiful symbol that they use of a star put into a spiral motion, and that's what it represents, is that motion is life and motion is health. And that's exactly what happens in our bodies. When we're looking at the physical self there, you know, when things stop moving, then it's like when the engine seizes in your car. You know, if it can't keep adapting to what the environment is, if you hit the gas because you need to go up the hill or move, period, and nothing happens, then it's dead. So it's the same thing in our bodies, you know, and you can't keep stressing out the adrenals or stressing out some other system or organ in the body and expect it to keep going and going and going. You've got to give it a better environment than that, and you've got to...
Well, again, this is fundamental stuff, but like you're saying, just to pick up where you left off there, is that when you deal with that premise that life is motion, motion is life, very fundamental thing. I don't think hardly anyone out there, even on the allopathic side, would argue with that. I think where their sort of, again, that dualistic thing comes in is when they start breaking it down to mechanics. And that's why this is so funny. The argument that you get about, you know, chiropractic, how could it ever affect the immune system? And I always ask people that, especially, you know, when they're clinicians and they ask me, like, I go, do you have the same books I have on my shelf? You know, Gray's Anatomy and Guyton's Physiology. I said, I said, how does lymph move in your body? Lymph. Lymph, you know, that stuff, that lymphatics that has the B cells in it that gives you all that memory, that long-term immunity. How does lymph move in your body? And I'll wait. Pediatricians, orthopedists, oh, surgeons sometimes. They're sitting there dumbfounded. I go, your phasic muscles. Stupid. I get really frustrated sometimes. I've been doing this too long. Oh, somebody needs a Prozac. And it's like those fundamental things that are your part of your locomotor system, your voluntary motor system even, is what pumps the lymph through the body. And when you don't have coordination in that in those phasic muscle groups, you get inflammation. So you can't even have a chemical reaction until you have a discoordination in the system. So that's why, you know, I'm always about restoring coherence. This is where some of the chiropractors get sick of me, because I'll say you can't remove the interference. That's your educated, you know, little story. What you can do is restore coherence. It's already there. It's at the core of the system. What happens is that we end up with a lot of residual tension from a lot of bad memory. Again, those things we talked about before that spook us and make us not feel safe. System stores that because it says, you know what? If something similar comes around in the environment, I want to recognize it because that could be a threat next time. Not this time, but maybe next time. And then you have that surface tension where it's actually interacting with the environment directly, which is where Bruce Lipton comes in with the membranes. That has to read the signals and convert those signals into action. And this is very mechanical. I mean, when you read Lipton's work, as vitalistic as it is, and if you haven't heard of Bruce Lipton, go read his stuff, Biology of Belief, great stuff, is that those fundamental principles are there, and they're very mechanical. They're not asking you to go anywhere off the material plane. You're sitting here, and you're still dealing with Newtonian physics for the most part. Where it gets weird, where it gets wonky, is that a lot of this stuff is happening below threshold, okay? Because 99% of the sensory information that comes into your system is discarded before it ever reaches your brain. It's just noise. It recognizes it and dismisses it, right? 93-something percent of any kind of communication we have, it's not even verbal. 99% of the things you learn, is all, you know, pretty much research stuff, is not even conscious to you. And there's a half a second delay between what's happening and what you're processing. Okay? So it's like whatever the now is a half a second behind you because consciousness has a lag time. Benjamin Lippert's work. Why are we not teaching our kids that? We've had 35 years of neuroscience. We've had about 55 years of cybernetics. And we haven't taught any of these kids in the last three generations that stuff. We're still teaching them crap from, 200 years ago. The old school Darwinian stuff and Punnett squares and Mendelian genetics and things like this that make us think that we are machines and we are mechanical and that's all we are. And it's very limited. And because of that, I think vitalism has a hard time spreading itself as an idea in the culture because it gets put in the rubric of spiritual woo, alchemy, you know, life force, gaga, gaga stuff. When if the most cutting-edge stuff out there is all about energy, it's all about field, it's all about the immaterial nature of man. How do we get to the point, and we've been, you know, you've been practicing 4 years, I've been practicing almost 20, how do we get to the point where the public that is thirsting for a better model, for a better way of understanding themselves, how do we get to the point where they can actually sit across at a kitchen table of allopathically hard edge, you know, the opposite side of the street, and communicate this in an intelligent way and let people make an informed choice instead of having it dismissed out of hand? Because you see people protesting all over the place. They're not going hook, line, and sinker, you know, for this vaccine this time. So what do you think it's going to take? There was a vitalism conference. I don't know if you went to it down at Life back in the spring. That they had a Life College down in Marietta. Is it going to take, this type of a, is it going to take 50,000 people dying over this vaccine to make the public kind of, you know, take a look at this stuff? Or what do you think is going to be the mechanism here? Mechanism, I said.
It's really hard to say if that's even going to be enough. It almost seems like people have been so just ingrained already with the ideas, you know, I don't know. It's just really a challenge. I guess I'm just really feeling fortunate that I work at a place called Gypsy Hands, where people walk in the door kind of already knowing we're a sort of woo-woo place, you know?
Yeah.
And it was well established before I ever came into that space. And so, you know, we have an intuitive, and we have several Reiki masters, and, you know, the
uh-huh.
owner teaches Reiki. And so we already have a clientele who...
Oh, yeah. You could smell the patchouli from here. That's right.
Exactly. You know, and that's really yeah. wonderful. And I certainly get my share of clients who come in off the street, you know, with back pain, neck pain, you know, it was just in an accident of some kind, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
something flaring up from 20, 30 years ago. But then I get to go through the whole education of, like, well, look at why this is still in your field.
Well, your stuff, you know, and Gypsy Hands, the concept down there, and gypsyhands.com, check out the site, by all means. What's the name of the director there? I forgot her name, top of my head.
Sarah Griscom is the owner.
Right, okay. And is that, she's applying a cross-cultural approach, you know, to holistic care, where you get, you know, disciplines from around the world, where, again, we're so used to one-dimensional Western medicine here. That when you experience something like Reiki or do something, you know, like a cranial psychotherapy, or you go a little further and you get into Ayurvedic stuff, or you get into homeopathy, or you get into some of the deeper ends of yoga, things like that, that are coming from ancient cultures. I mean, come on, way back. That opens you up, too. So the more modalities, I'm always in favor of more modalities, more practitioners. Don't stick with one person as your guidance counselor. You know, use people as resources. Don't lean and because, again, I'm sometimes, you know, a little bit PO'd that I become sort of a six-foot aspirin for people, you know, because all they want is just relief. And sometimes people just call my answering machine just because they want to hear my voice, you know, and that gives them an anchor for the day. And they go, and I think that's great. But the thing is that it also limits them as a human being to saying, I can't get this message from anywhere else. And that's the part that... And I have to watch the freaking Phillies clinch the division. Oh, I'm going to vomit. Sorry, a little baseball news. How do you get to the point where you can free people up enough? And you create, like working at a place like Gypsy Hands, you're creating an environment, again, that word environment, where people are walking out of the culture that they've been schooled in, and they're going into a different world. Literally, when they go into Gypsy Hands, they're going into a different world, and they're not given the signal that they're not whole. They're not given the signal that they're broken. They're given the signal that they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, why couldn't that be the environment that kids are educated in, or, you know, people are cared for at different stages of their life? You know, they used to have up in Hartford, the hospital up there, they had the NICU up there was called the Bliss Room. Instead of the emergency room, it was the Bliss Room. Everybody was blissed out on, you know, it was basically on anesthesia. But it took a little, like you said, that thing about the people at the airport looking at the orange, you know, terror sign all the time. It's like there's so many anchors in the culture that say disease, threat, warning, danger everywhere, that if you stopped and looked at it all the time, just traffic signs alone are enough to traumatize a lot of people. Is you have to start recognizing and notice what you notice. I always tell people, it's not what you know, it's what you notice. And then notice what you notice, because that's the manifestation of your maps. And if your maps are not coherent, if your maps are not dynamic, if your maps are not open, then you have a lot of fixed points of view that will anchor you to experiences that threatened you in the past. And a lot of the stuff in Vitalism talks about freeing you up from those things. So I guess to wrap up, what do you think is the number one misconception people have about themselves, human beings, that you can clear up for them using your vitalistic resources here and the way that you work that you like to share with the audience? To clear up a couple of things, some mistruth about themselves that they're walking around with, it, or something about their potential they're not aware of.
I think we've already touched on it a couple of times. I think just to really get that they already have everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all in there. Maybe it's just untapped. Maybe it's tapped out, you know. And sometimes it takes additional support in the case of, you know, healthcare practitioners like you and I and, you know, all the other people who are doing the kind of stuff that we're doing to help them get back to understanding and knowing and trusting that. But it's there.
Yeah, well, that takes a lifetime sometimes to trust it. But just to know that it's possible is a revelation for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know,
well, you know, I think the deeper into the bush you go, the quicker the process may be. You know, we've got some Maori healers coming in from New Zealand, very indigenous folks. They literally live in the bush still. And, well, they spend part of their time in there. They do have very Western culture things that they deal with about half the year, but then they spend a good part of their year out in the middle of nowhere on their own sacred land. But they come into Gypsy Hands about once a year. They travel around the country, and they're going to come and spend about 3 or 4 days with us doing their healing work and giving workshops and stuff like that. And, you know, you want to move through some stuff pretty fast. That's that's one of the places where it's at.
Well, yeah, again, like I said, exposure to other cultures that don't have this paradigm is, to me, if I had to pull an answer off the rack, you know, and there's been a lot of infusion in the last 25 years or so of other cultures. Yoga, I talked about, even just martial arts.
Acupuncture,
big time. That just crossed my mind as you said it. Homeopathy's come back a little bit. There's a lot of inroads that have been made. In the name of diversity, in the name of the holistic paradigm, that have caused people to question, at least, or at least sometimes get to the point where they could work with both systems, which to me is very confusing. We're talking about a mixer, and I've seen it. I've seen people come in and you know, they'll practice their yoga asanas in the room, and then they're outside smoking a cigarette, drinking a frappuccino 10 minutes later. This is America, so. I understand it's going to be a slow and often wonkish transition, but it, just the fact, like I said, have these novel experiences. The principle comes from Neurobics, Lawrence Katz's work down at Raleigh-Durham, is that your nervous system is craving novelty. It's redundancy. It's that being it's stuck in a lot of routinized behaviors. That causes us to age quicker, that causes us to become very resistant to change and not be able to handle things when things are in flux. And I always say, look, you know, it's just very simple. Brush your teeth with your non-dominant hand for a couple of days. That's all it takes to rewire a couple of things. And that, again, that's those little shifts like that are nuances enough to open you up to new experiences. If you start out with that, then you can go see your guys coming in and the shaman next week and whoever's coming in after that. And it's like, then you start craving novelty to the point where you say, okay, I've tried enough of these flavors. These are the 5 or 6 I like, and that becomes part of your core arsenal, and you develop some practices through that. And then again, this first-person authority that I always go back to, usually about this time of the show, actually, is really what you're trying to achieve. And when you have first-person authority, you're at the point now where you can share. You can actually shed your light rather than try to, you know, hoard it and hide in it sometimes. And, you know, just a couple of tweets during the show. This one comes from somatic therapy, Michael Moore, over in Australia. He always sends some good stuff out. He says, when we're shocked and frightened, our energy and awareness moves upwards, ground by having physical contraction and breathe into your belly. Pretty simple stuff. But objects exist only in relation to the minds that think them. There's another quote he gave us. So, you know, I guess like I'm saying, a lot of the stuff we talked about tonight is fundamental, is basic, it's not complicated, yet for most people it's news. And thank God for me and you, we get to deliver the news rather than have to go seek it out. So, you know, good luck with Oinktober down there in Knoxville. Keep me posted in case if they make Tennessee one of these mandated states. I'll put it on my list, and hopefully we can get enough people to be aware of their options and make some healthy choices as we go into the fall and you know, try to ride this storm out a little bit, because I got a feeling it's going to be a doozy, and we're not even in October yet, and I'm already talking about it with you tonight. So thanks for joining us tonight at Summertime, and travel light, my friend, and keep doing what you're doing. You got a great job. You got a great situation down there, and play the hand you're dealt. That's all I can tell you.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Take care. We'll talk to you soon down the line. Keep in touch.
All right. Thanks. Have a great night.
Take care. Okay. So there goes Dr. Natalie. Well, I guess there kind of goes Dr. Natalie. Dang thing. Okay. Whoops. It's just hit the button too many times. 111, are you on the air? Are you there? You have a question? I'm hitting you again. All right, you're not there. Okay? I don't know what the 111 is, but I guess this is somebody listening. So we covered a lot of stuff. I want to see if I can sum up the evening. As, you know, Friday, Michael Moore's movie comes out. I know everyone's actually waiting that in the audience. Hi, Maureen. You know, talking about capitalism. And a lot of the stuff, when you deal with the allopathic system, deals with money and deals with, you know, the underbelly of, you know, what drugs really are, which is a product that gets sold. So, you know, our friend here, Mike Adams, Mr. Health Ranger, Adams, and more Adams, he laid down this track that I want to play for you quick. Let's take out the, you know, the message we got from this week about vitalism, what it means to own your own vitality. You don't give it up easily. And thank God for the people over in New Jersey and those folks up in Albany protesting. And, you know, fight this fight, guys, because I'm telling you, you give this up and you're going to regret it, because I really feel like this is one of those ones they're playing for keeps. And when they start talking about throwing around numbers like 90,000 people, and then they backtrack from it. When exactly is Obama getting his flu shot, by the way, or his children? I don't know. Maybe I have to ask Glenn Beck. Anyway, here's this little ditty. It only takes 2 minutes from our friend, the Health Ranger. Enjoy.
More than 1 million Americans are already infected. It's safe for children to get vaccinated. The swine flu's coming back like a viral attack. It's like 7 to 6. You gotta cover your back, but not get the vaccine. Don't give them to that, because those medical quacks are making money off that.
They wanna inject you, infect you with the vaccine. They say they protect, but they reject your immunity. And if you protect, they arrest you and they lock you down.
Can I keep it like that? Walking around contagious. The truth is outrageous. Don't you know the drug companies made this flu? And if you're thinking you wanna evade this, then you gotta say this.
Don't inject me. Don't infect me.
Don't stick that needle in my arm and chemically wreck me.
Don't inject me. Don't infect me.
Don't stick that needle in my vein and medically wreck me.
Don't use me. Don't abuse me.
Don't push your medical lies and try to confuse me.
Don't trick me. Don't you dick me.
With that needle in your hand, don't you dare try to prick me. Don't you know the swine flu is paid by man? Pharmaceutical scam is all part of the Big Brother population plan. But the thing I don't understand is why they're in Mexico City in an unmarked military van. They don't want you to see the remedy. You can stop influenza with vitamin D for free. Herbal medicine is all that you need. But they can't charge a $50 fee unless
they inject you. They infect you.
They stick a needle in your arm and chemically wreck you.
They use you. They abuse you.
They say they're saving your life while they really confuse you.
What? All you parents, grab your kids and shoot them up just like guinea pigs. Inject your teens and your babies in the crib. And when they get paralyzed, that's when you realize there's no way to undo what you did.
The big drug companies are making the killing, collecting the billions and getting away like a James Bond villain, because they're willing to do almost anything just to make money with the flu vaccine.
All right, the Health Ranger. There he is, Mike Adams, naturalnews.com, giving a free pop there. All right, guys, so next week we're going to have Barbara Lowe Fish on from the National Vaccine Information Center, big conference this weekend down in Washington, D.C. Go check that out at nvic.org, I think is the website. We're going to post some things over the weekend on blogsoma.net about that. Just make sure you're up on that one, because I'm telling you, I'm going to hit this thing until it is dead. I am sick and tired of people getting suckered by the system, and, you know, they will get you. They will absolutely exploit every one of you if you don't know what you're doing. And you don't know what your rights are, you don't know what your resources are, and if you don't have a health philosophy that understands your living system. You're not a three-dimensional object that just can be deposited like a mailbox. They can just keep putting things in you, just rattling you around. I don't understand why people buy into this garbage. Okay. So anyway, there's your show, all right? And any questions, you can get me at nakedsoma@gmail.net. And I want to wish everybody a happy Oinktober. And any comments, any questions, I'm always open to it. I will absolutely respond to all of you. I'm just here to try to give you the ideas and let the conversation go from there, right? All right, so thanks again for listening. And here's a little Leonard Cohen to take us out. It wanders back on the air. Listen to the words, Sapes. We will dance again next week. For everybody here at Summertime, which includes me and me. Be yourself and be well. Travel light.